The guy who knows more about it than we do, about the White Sox trade for Nestor Molina.
He joins us on the Home Run In Hotline. Home Run In Pizza, always a big hit for the holidays. You can find him on Twitter at @Kevin_Goldstein. Follow him at Baseball Prospectus. He's with us on The Score, Kevin Goldstein. What's up, Kevin?
How's it going, guys?
Oh, should we be excited at all and look ahead with this, the deal the White Sox made and say, okay, this can't be a bad idea?
It's not an awful idea, and it's fun to say Nestor Molina. So
yes, it is.
You know, there's additional value there.
There is.
But I mean, Nestor Molina is one of those prospects where the numbers are certainly better than the scouting reports. I'm not saying he's a stiff or anything, but you know, if you look at those numbers, the ERA and the strikeouts per nine, you might think he's some sort of overwhelming
sound
power
great.
Pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he's not. He's a guy who's kind of 89-93, and then he's a guy with far more location than pure stuff. He, you know, the fastball's average to maybe a little bit above, but he has the ability to locate it and just be funky. I mean, he'll add some cut to it. He'll sink it. He has two breaking balls. He throws both a changeup and kind of a split change. I mean, his job is to throw strikes and keep hitters off balance, change their eye level. It's there's potential there for a decent starting pitcher there, but he's not going to be a star.
I hate these guys who have every pitch, but they don't know when to throw what and don't realize that still the best pitch in baseball is just a well-located fastball. We went through it with Javi Vasquez. We went through it with Edwin Jackson. And I don't want him to be another one of these guys. And I know he doesn't have the top-end stuff that either one of those guys have, but sometimes if you have a lot of pitches, it means you don't have one good pitch.
That's a great point, yeah. And it's a point where sequencing becomes very important. And frankly, like you said, I mean, the fastball kind of, velocity trump can trump a lot of things. And these kind of pitchers have just a smaller margin for error. You know, a great pitcher with a great fastball, even when he's off a little bit, is still going to get away with more because he's going to miss some bats. That might not be as easy for Nestor Molina. I mean, I think he slots well as a number four starter, maybe a number three. If you dream on him and everything goes perfect, he could become some sort of Jair Jurgens kind of guy. But that's unlikely. It's more going to be a number four thing. And I'm surprised to see the White Sox already talking about him as a potential reliever, because when you look at his stuff, I understand the relief thing. There's some funk in the delivery, and you wonder if he can hold up for a full workload. But when you have a guy who, no matter what his stuff's been, had some success as a starter in the minors, you leave him as a starter as long as possible. You don't want to move him to the bullpen until you're forced to.
We discussed this before, Kevin, about the Braves farm system. And as I recall, like at the end of last year and through the year, that the Braves farm system was very highly thought of late, right? I mean, they have several top-notch prospects.
Especially on the pitching side, yeah.
Yeah. But not this guy. He's not one of them. Not this guy.
The Jays are loaded with prospects. They are kind of dealing from a position of strength, the sense that they have tons of young arms, not guys who can help them, in 2012, maybe not 2013. They have all these, 18 and 19-year-olds that when you watch them, you're like, oh, my God, that guy could be great in 4 years. It's those kind of kids. And so, it's going to be a while. And the White Sox, frankly, dealt from one of their very, very few positions of strength. Their top prospect, maybe their only prospect before this deal, was Addison Reed, who is who's nastier than Sergio Santos and is ready to go.
That's what I was thinking, because I know you were of the belief that the White Sox farm system was really just kind of the petrified forest. I mean, some of these deals now have to be to rebuild, to get something, anything in the pipeline, rather than just kind of waiting for this next draft and trying to do it there. But don't you think that the new collective bargaining agreement actually brings the field back to the White Sox a little bit, who never were willing to spend above slot, that some of these other guys, the Theo Epstein and everybody else that were throwing around some of the massive bonuses and all that? This is a good deal for the White Sox, right?
No question. I mean, the new CBA rewards the teams that were really crappy at the draft. I mean, congratulations, you've been brought back up. Basically, you're lowering the standards for everybody, and so now the White Sox aren't in the same hole they used to be. And so it's great for them, but they do need to rebuild that system, and they need to they do need to blow things up kind of as much as possible. I mean, we talked about this before, but, when you try to be both competitive and rebuilding, you tend to fail at both. And so you have to do one or the other. The White Sox aren't in a position to contend, so they have to rebuild, and that's going to come with these kind of trades.
You know, what I wonder about, and Kevin, baseball is the endlessly surprising, like weird things seem to happen. And I just wondered, when you look at that division, you never know what happens. I mean, if I guess Cleveland will probably be picked to finish second, and the Tigers will remain on top. But an injury here, an injury there. I just, because sometimes when you look at this stuff, you say, okay, the White Sox are dead in the water. There's no chance. Now, I don't know what else Kenny has in mind, but I just wonder, what does it take for them to get back in any kind of a race with these, with the Indians and the Tigers next season?
I mean, the great news is you're talking about the American League Central. You're not talking about how are they going to compete with the Yankees and the Red Sox. You're talking about how they're going to compete with, you know, the Tigers and the Indians. I mean, the Indians are scaring you. Your team's in all sorts of trouble. You know, the Indians are going to be okay. The Tigers are still – I still think, you know, here in Dallas, it just feels like they're some kind of sleeping giant. They're going to make some sort of move that's going to improve that team dramatically, you know, be it a pitcher or a big bat. But, I mean, the Tigers are a team to be scared of. But even then, I mean, the Tigers are a team, as we saw them in the playoffs, plenty of holes offensively. You're in the Central, so a rebuild is not nearly a foreboding kind of act as it would be in another division.
Well, they're still going to need starting pitching, and it appears they may be trading all of it away. So the decision, I guess, it's funny. No, when I hear Terry ask that question, yeah, and I think, okay, that's exactly the trap you're describing, Kevin, is he may say, well, you know, if I don't trade John Danks, if I don't trade Gavin Floyd, if I don't trade Carlos Quentin, and hope that Rios and Dunn and PV all of a sudden can have rebound season, don't trade A.J. Pierzynski. Now, really, isn't the ballsier thing to do is to not let the temptation of competing in a bad division keep you from trying to win the World Series?
And that's the problem. And yeah, and then here in Dallas, I guarantee at some point late at night, people are sitting around drinking, and you can start playing that game. You can start going, boy, if TV's healthy, and if Dunn comes back and becomes Adam Dunn, and you basically, the number of ifs you have are directly correspond to your chances. And then the White Sox have a mountain of ifs right now.
They are the mountain,
giant
of if.
Mountain of ifs. And I wanted to get to the Cubs, too, because I enjoyed the prospect report that you put up on Baseball Prospectus. And I guess for me, reading all of the lengthy individual scouting reports on the top prospects in the Cubs organization, the takeaway that I have is there's plenty of good players there, but even their best prospect, Brett Jackson, only projects to be a good player.
That's the best way to put it. I mean, it's been the way that the system's been for years, where I think if you, you know, could look at the Cubs system up and down, or you just scout that whole system, you know, people tell you, we see plenty of big leaguers, but I'm not sure how many guys we see that are going to make a difference for them. You know, Brett Jackson's going to be a very good player for them, but is he going to be a guy who is a face of the franchise? Is he going to be a guy who helps put them over the top? I'm not sure. I think he's going to be a guy who holds down the position he plays and then plays there pretty well, and you're happy with him. You know, but some sort of perennial all-star? No. I mean, that guy is still Starlin Castro, and there's some upside guys that they got from last year's draft. They spent big in the draft. They spent big internationally last year. Of course, they can't do that anymore. But, you know, the future stars, I'm not sure, are in the Cubs system yet.
Do you believe, and this is not really a number, but you would have an opinion as, do you believe the Cubs are really searching around and in the battle, actually in the battle for Pujols or Fielder?
I think they are, but it has to kind of be on their terms. And obviously, if you're a Pujols or Fielder, you really don't care about anyone else's terms. You only care about your terms. And yeah, I think that it's pretty clear that the Cubs have interest in Pujols if he's willing to do a contract that has a crazy average annual salary, but is not long. You know, they're not willing to give him six, seven, eight, and some teams have even talked about 9-year deals. That's just not in the cards, but they might be interested in a 3 or 4, maybe 5 for a crazy annual salary. And, you know, the problem there with Pujols is the same problem that the Cardinals had last year at this time, where they were trying to get that extension done. And it seemed like Pujols, and to Pujols' camp, which is led by Lozano, that the number that was important to them, they weren't necessarily interested in the annual salary. They wanted to break some sort of records in the total package. Mm-hmm. You know, they wanted to top the 252 that A-Rod got. And so that's in that situation, it just doesn't match up very well with the Cubs. And, you know, I think they're going to keep trying. I think they'll certainly be talking to them. But it's going to be tough to see them kind of out dealing or outmaneuvering some of these other teams. They're just going to be far more aggressive in terms of both annual salary and just length of the deal.
Talking with Kevin Goldstein of Baseball Prospectus on WSCR, The Score, and we discussed the collective bargaining agreement's effect on the White Sox, certainly helping them and leveling the field. Initial reaction was, wow, this hurts the Cubs because this takes away a huge part of the plan. Not just the spending over the slot, but the idea of loading up on free agents to be, to get the compensatory sandwich picks, and finding ways, finding loopholes in the system to let them stockpile picks and opportunities to draft talent. Is it as bad a blow as it seemed at first blush? Because then I read, well, if you really drill down into some of the details here, it maybe isn't as bad as first thought. Now that we know all we know and a lot of smart people have gone over it, what do you think?
It still certainly affects them. You're right, not maybe as much as it did at first blush, but I mean, they will be able to spend aggressively in the draft, but nowhere near as aggressively as they would have liked to have spent or as they would have spent under the previous CBA rules. The bigger limits and the place where they're really just hampered is internationally. I mean, this is a team that you know, based on some discussions, was looking to spend somewhere in the neighborhood of $8 to $10 million in the international market this summer. That number is now 2.9, because that's all they can spend. And so, I mean, you're talking about one third of the international budget, and that's, you know, between that and I'm sure in the draft they were looking to probably spend somewhere in an eight figure neighborhood. You know, a $10 million budget. That's now going to be maybe $5 or $6 million, depending on how all the slots fall out. So that's why all of a sudden you hear them, when you never heard them before the CBA came out, that's why you hear them suddenly involved with some free agents, because they need to swing things up. But at the same time, this $20 million that was kind of set aside for player procurement is down to probably $7 or $8 million. So that's $12 million sitting around, you know, that they're not necessarily going to pocket, that they need to find some way to spend on ways to improve the team.
No, Kevin, as we get ready to let you go, always appreciate it. You know, it's funny because it's such a difficult position. I would not want to really be Theo at this point because, you know, when you're the Messiah, you and your buddy Jed and everybody else and Ellie Mae and all the other Clampets are in town, I find it, you know, the pressure is not only enormous on you, and maybe they'll give you a year leeway or two, but when you start drafting, all I can say is you better be right. And I mean, I don't know how difficult it is, and I know he did it in Boston, but boy, you'd better be right, because otherwise, you all of a sudden, you look a lot like Jim Hendry again.
But you're right. You better be right. And frankly, Theo spent a lot in the draft. Those Red Sox teams spent a lot in the draft, but they weren't always right. I mean, it was very much because they know how risky the draft is. Look, you're drafting 18-year-old kids a lot. You have no idea what they're going to do once they get $1 million in their pocket. Sometimes they do some really stupid stuff and destroy their careers. But I mean, they basically spent all this money because that was how to get all the stars. You signed 10 kids that you thought might turn into something to do, and you look like geniuses. You know, they can't do that anymore. I mean, the attrition rate's still going to be the same. And you're right. I mean, the pressure is on them. I mean, based on Cubs fans and what I hear from, I mean, anything they do right now is just a stroke of genius. They signed David DeJesus, and people act like Pujols is coming to town just because Theo made the move. And if they don't get 5 rings in the next 2 years, people are going to be disappointed. This project suddenly got a lot harder with the new CBA. And I think it became, you know, the outlook as far as how this is going to take, maybe got another year, maybe two, even added to it. There's no guarantees here, guys. I mean, they're not going to be able to draft as many players, you know, really good players as they used to. I mean, the Red Sox system's littered with guys they gave $1 million to that did not turn out. A ton of them did, but that's because they gave $1 million to so many players. And the scary thing is now, to go back to that extra money thing, is Theo's track record of free agents of late, over the last few years, is ugly. And it was very much kind of the guy at the mall with a ton of money in his pocket to burn, and he goes and, you know, buys the gasoline-powered turtleneck sweater because he's got nothing else to buy. And goes to, you know, picks up John Lackey.
Hey, credit Steve Martin on that one.
That Steve Martin joke all the way in the fur-covered sink.
And the fur sink and an electric dog polisher.
And so he became that guy, and I got all this money. I don't really like anyone. Oh, I'll get John Lackey. Look at Carl Crawford, way more money than anyone else is offering. And some of those guys haven't worked out, and that's where you got to be a little bit worried. I mean, Theo's an incredible general manager. He was a great hire, but he's hardly perfect, and then, you know, none of them are.
Well, I didn't think we were going to get a Let's Get Small reference from Kevin Goldstein today, but I'm endlessly surprised. Maybe we'll get the full plumber joke next time.
I said socket, not sprocket.
Thanks, Kevin, as always.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks, guys.
Kevin Goldstein of Baseball Prospectus.
What are your guys?
Very interesting stuff, as always.
Yeah,
that's...